All right, guys, the Kansas City Chiefs are your Super Bowl 57 champions. Patrick Mahomes, now a two-time Super Bowl MVP. And I got some personal joy out of seeing the outcome of that game as well. We'll get into that a little bit later. To go over everything, and not just what happened in the game, but what this means for the upcoming offseason, which is going to play out into free agency and the NFL draft. With me to talk about it all, as always, my man, Mr. Trey Wingo.
Brett, what's up, buddy? Good seeing you in Arizona. That's where it was.
God, yes, sir. Crazy.
Good. We made some great content that'll be coming up on the website a little bit. We're excited about that.
Yeah.
And excited about one of the greatest Super Bowls of all time. Like, I get it. If your team didn't win and if you didn't like the holding call, and we'll talk about that, all of it. But bottom line, we had the two most evenly matched teams that I can think of in a long time playing a very competitive game that went down to the last second. It arguably was the greatest Super Bowl of all time.
Yeah, I remember I was texting with you, yesterday? And I was like, hey, where's this game rank for you? And I think your response was pretty effing up there.
Yeah, so. that is true. Like, you know, I can be swayed by the Giants in Super Bowl 42, the magnitude of the upset and, you know, the Patriots dynasty that started in Super Bowl 36 and Super Bowl 13, a lot of historians would look at as 35-31, which is a really good Super Bowl. And there are a bunch of other ones that are close. Super Bowl 52 was an incredible game. This one, for a lot of reasons to me, might be the greatest of all time.
All right, let's start to unpack it a little bit. One of the things that I was tweeting about, I was getting a lot of like pushback on. I think a lot of the reason why the Eagles were the favorites, and I think, you know, from what I could tell, most of the money coming in was on them. Most of the pundits were picking them. And a lot of it had to do with their defense, Trey, and the historic season that they had. But I had said that I felt, based on what I was looking at research-wise, that they were a bit overrated. Did that come through to you in this game?
Well, I mean, yeah. And again, they earned their record. They earned the things that they did. I mean, they are the first team ever with four players with double-digit sacks. I mean, that's never happened before. They had 70, which I think is the third most sacks in the history of the NFL.
Yeah.
But just go through the list of the quarterbacks that they played. Was Kirk Cousins the best quarterback they played? Was it Dak Prescott in a year where he missed five games and still led the NFL in interceptions with 15? Was it Trevor Lawrence in week three in a monsoon before the Jags got good? I mean, was it Taylor Heineke? Like who was the best quarterback that Eagles defense faced this year? And yeah. You look at the Chiefs defense, which got the stops they needed. You know, you can talk about a million different things and all these points, but the Chiefs got some key stops and they're able to take advantage of it. They faced Joe Burrow twice. They yep. faced Josh Allen. They faced Trevor Lawrence twice. They faced Justin Herbert twice. The level of quarterbacks that the Eagles defense played compared to the level of quarterbacks that the Chiefs defense played was remarkable. And people thought of it as this massive difference because they're looking at it over an 18-game schedule. Well, the Chiefs on more than one occasion started six rookies on defense. Six, right? So they're obviously going to get better as the year went on, and that's exactly what happened. I'm not saying the Eagles' defense was overrated. I'm saying the Eagles' defense hadn't seen what they were going to see on Super Bowl Sunday before Super Bowl Sunday.
Yeah, I'm going to take it a step further. I'm going to say that they were overrated, and not that, you know, you and I are on different sides of this. Just, you know, I'm comparing it to the coverage and to the way that people spoke about them and the narrative that followed into that game. Trey, one of the things that I saw, I track something called scoring behavior rate, which very simply is points scored per minute of possession time. When the Eagles faced a top 15 team in that metric this year, they gave up an average of 28 points. Okay, they gave up the worst rate of points per minute of opponent possession time in those games. When they played a team not in the top 15, they did really, really well. And so for me, it was like, look, if I see you against good competition and you're getting beat soundly, right? They played the Cowboys. That was the game with Gardner Minshew. They gave up 40 points in that game, right? Yeah. Like, you know, who's the best quarterback they played this season? Patrick Mahomes, he put up 31 points in only 27 minutes.
Yeah,
like that's what happened.
Yeah, that's the amazing part of it. If you go look at how dominant that first half was for Philadelphia because of the offensive line play and the, you know, the missed field goal and then the sort of the slip on third down where they which led to the McKinnon was led to the missed field goal by Butker, where McKinnon sort of missed on Reddick and he's supposed to chip him and then he would be wide open in the flat, and just a little bit there. But that's like that's the beauty of Mahomes, right? Like if the Eagles were down 10 at the half, I would have been like, I think this one might be over. Right. But when the Chiefs are down 10, the Chiefs were down 10 in the fourth quarter of Super Bowl 54, and they scored three touchdowns to win by 11. Okay. Like Patrick Mahomes is the only quarterback since 1950 with a winning record when his team has trailed by as many as 10 points. He's 14-10 now, including the postseason. No other quarterback has a higher winning percentage of 37%. And he has a winning record when his team is down double digits.
When you gave that stat a few weeks ago, my jaw hit the floor. And not only did it hit the floor because that's a ridiculous stat, but then to see it play out in the biggest game of the year on the biggest stage is just, it's mind-boggling how lucky we are to see this guy. And you can't overstate it. And those of you who think we're overstating it, I don't know what you were watching on Sunday, but it's a different breed, Trey. He's a different breed.
Look, again, we'll get into the Super Bowl and all this stuff, but like they lost either the best or the second best receiver in football. There's no other way to state it, okay?
Yeah.
In terms of production, and they lost either number one or number two. In a real magnanimous gesture on my part, I'll give you maybe he's three if you're a huge Devontae Adams fan, okay?
Yeah, but it's a big maybe, right?
Like it's a big maybe. They lost that guy, and they found a way with nobody at wide receiver. Nobody.
Marcus
to have the
Kemp.
Most passing yards, the most passing touchdowns, the highest scoring offense in the NFL, and the most productive offense in the NFL in terms of yards per game, which is the official NFL metric. Where do you think that comes from? Where do you think that happens? It's because 15 is a freaking alien unicorn. No one else is doing that. Tua got better because they got Tyreek Hill. Jalen Hurts got better in part because they got A.J. Brown. They lost that guy, and they're like, we're good. And they're good for one reason, 15.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the other quarterback in this game because he was garnering a lot of conversation for his play. Jalen Hurts played really, really well in this game.
He was the best player on the field. Let's just be clear. One person's performance above everyone else, as much as we're lauding Mahomes because he was ridiculous in the second half, and you know, obviously they didn't have many opportunities in the first half because of the way the Eagles were playing bully ball. Jalen Hurts was the best player on the field by a mile. Now, Nick Bolton played a great game. We can talk about that and why I think that's significant in helping us decipher what we saw on Super Bowl Sunday. But Jalen Hurts was the best player on the field. He was the best player on the field. And, you know, the graphic says it's Jalen Hurts silenced the doubters. Yeah. Yes. Okay. Like they've got their dude. There's no question about it. And it always makes me wonder why the MVP has to go to someone on the winning side. We've only had one MVP that was a losing Super Bowl team. And that was Chuck Howley.
Howley,
who just got into the Hall of Fame at the age of 86. This past induction class or this past vote, he had two interceptions, a forced fumble, and a bunch of tackles in Super Bowl V, which the Cowboys lost to the Baltimore Colts 16-13. But go look at some of the most remarkable performances we've seen on Super Bowl Sunday. A lot of them are by someone on the losing team. Jalen Hurts on Super Bowl Sunday. You could make the argument that Tom Brady in the game that they lost to the Eagles in Super Bowl 52, he threw for 300 yards in the first half. He had 500 yards in the game passing. That was his best Super Bowl performance ever in terms of his ability to move the ball.
Might have been his best game ever.
Correct. Didn't win Super Bowl MVP because they lost. Terrell Owens in Super Bowl 39 coming back from a broken leg. Was a much better receiver in that game than Deion Branch, but Deion Branch got the MVP. Yeah. Super Bowl 25, Thurman Thomas. Look at the numbers for Thurman compared to look at the numbers for Otis Anderson in the 20-19 win. But because Otis Anderson was on the winning team, he was the MVP. Larry Fitzgerald in Super Bowl 43.
I thought they were going to win that game.
He was amazing. Couple of touchdowns, massive amounts of receiving yards, but because Santonio Holmes made an amazing catch in the back of the end zone, which is great. I understand that. He gets the – I think we need to acknowledge that the – because the most valuable player is the best player. Okay, that's right. What it is. It was the best player. Because we're doing value, it's a whole different metric and it's a whole different dynamic. So we need to be able to recognize that maybe the MVP doesn't always have to go to the winning team, someone from the winning team.
So
it's just a thought.
In your opinion, if we were giving out the MVP based on like this criteria,
who played the best? Jalen Hurts.
Yeah. Let me ask you what you saw from him as a passer, because that was the question, right? We had said in our right. show when we were in Arizona that the Chiefs need to sell out to stop the run, make Jalen beat you with his arm, which they did. And Jalen Hurts was every throw he needed to make, he made, right? And that was something that I don't know that I had ever, like, in a complete picture, the way I watched the Super Bowl, I don't think I'd ever seen Jalen Hurts have a complete game the way he did in this one, right? Is that a fair statement?
No, it's fair. And we certainly didn't see it in the first two playoff games because A, they were up big, and B, they didn't need to do that. And some of that was the shoulder. And I do think the 2 weeks really helped him.
Yeah.
Obviously, he looked more like Jalen Hurts in not only the way he threw it, but also in the way he was running it. Like in the first two postseason games, he was sliding, getting out of bounds. You know, He went after some people in the running game, and I think that was an indication to me that the shoulder was better than we thought it might be. But he looked great, like the throw to Goddard, the throw to A.J. Brown, the throw to Quez Watkins, who jumped for no reason whatsoever. the only questionable throw, I thought, after he got the touchdown to A.J. Brown, he threw it again to win double coverage, and he's really lucky that Juan Thornhill or McDuffie didn't pick it off.
It was like a heat check, know? Right?
Right, him. Exactly. That was the only throw that you're like, no, yeah. But that was it.
Can we agree, you and I, that of all of the things that we saw Jalen Hurts do, the least impressive is the QB sneak play? Is that can we agree on that?
Well, the least that Jalen impressive
Hurts, that Jalen Hurts does. I want to be clear. Yeah. I'm talking about him individually. Like he's literally just getting the snap. As long as it's clean, they're picking him up and rugbying him over the line. He's not really.
As long as it's legal, I have no issue with it. It may not be impressive, but it sure as hell is effective.
Do you think the rules committee will take a look at that? No.
Well, like good. They're not doing anything. Good. Like if they do, like I have a problem with that. It's like changing the rules because Shaq can't make his free throws. You know what I mean?
Yes. Exactly.
You know, you don't change the rules because somebody can't do something or somebody is doing something so good that you can't stop it. Like, for example, in baseball now they're eliminating the shift, stupidest thing in the frickin' world. Okay, that's like telling an NFL team you can't overload blitz from one side because they can't handle it. No, you got to frickin' find a way. Okay, like I'm sorry, all these hitters that are just striking out or hitting home runs, learn to hit the other way. Like I can't believe baseball is doing that. Oh well, I can because baseball's desperate. Right. Because they need younger people watching. They need more people watching. But I mean, the idea of taking away something that is an analytic advantage based on coaching and you know, researching who you're playing, that sucks. So the idea of like getting rid of the Eagles power sneak because no one can find a way to stop it. Right.
Yeah.
Be creative. Come up with something, right? Yeah. Find something that you think will counter it and see if it works.
All right. Let's talk about, because we only spent a little bit of time, and he is the Super Bowl MVP. He is the best. You know, I did a video earlier for Pro Football Network on whether or not Andrew Luck should be a Hall of Fame candidate. And I said, you know, the only way for Andrew Luck to be a Hall of Fame candidate in his short 5.5 year stretch is he'd have to have the best 5.5 year stretch in quarterbacking history. And the person who owns that is Patrick Mahomes. And that was cemented, true or false, on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. Like if Patrick Mahomes retires tomorrow, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. Like I've been saying this for years. Okay. You can like other quarterbacks and you can believe they're really good. And that's wonderful. I got all the receipts, man. Like all the receipts come with 15. Okay. Like, what do you want? Look at his winning percentage. Even though wins to me and losses are not a quarterback stat. Look at his numbers his first 5 years compared to Tom Brady. Have you looked? Oh, look at his touchdown to interception ratio. Excited. I get it's a little different game. I totally understand that. But like, just people like, why are you gushing? I'm like, why aren't you gushing? Like, what don't you understand about what you're seeing? What part of you doesn't process greatness? I had some clown on Twitter say, the bar is so low for Mahomes.
Oh, I saw that.
Not one pass over 15 yards. I'm like, okay. So in other words, So in other words, what he's decided, by the way, go back and look at his career with Tyreek Hill. There were plenty of 15 plus yard throws. Okay. It's like, idiot. And then number two, so let me get this right. That's not available to him, but this thing is available to him. So he's being criticized for taking what the defense is giving him and scoring 31 points. That's a really weird position for you to like dig in on. That's like just so stupid. But hey, right.
you didn't know that you get more points when the ball goes further. Yeah,
you don't get any more points if it's more 15 yard throws. You throw what is necessary to win the game. Right. If you have those 15 yard throws and you have someone that can run there and catch them, awesome. And we've seen that from him before. You know what you do as a quarterback? You do what you need to do to win the game, and you do what you need to do to make your offense effective. And that's exactly what he did. Look at the second half. They had four possessions, touchdown, 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 and a field goal because they didn't want to score a touchdown, which would have given the ball back to Philadelphia.
Yeah. I mean, look, and full disclosure for everybody, I was very emotionally invested in this game. One of my my clients and my dear friend,
Lucas Niang,
played in this Super Bowl, and opportunity for his first ring. And I very desperately wanted
who was in on the final touchdown because Andrew Wiley had been eligible as a wide receiver on the previous game, and you can't go from eligible to ineligible in back-to-back snaps. So Lucas was on the field when Sky Moore did the pump fake on the left side, whereas Kadarius Toney did it on the right side. By the way, side note about that, did you hear what Mahomes said about that play?
No, what's that?
They messed up the formation.
Oh, yeah. I saw that.
Sky was supposed to go to the right side where Toney was and on the previous touchdown, but he lined up on the left side, and he started to run. I'm not sure if he's trying to get back there or said if he was like, screw it, I'm just going to do it on this side. And they, thankfully Mahomes recognized it, saw Sky Moore. And again, the Eagles couldn't pass it off on the left side or the right side. It didn't matter. It didn't matter.
What's funny is I saw that Matt Nagy was going to call a timeout because of that. And Pat waved him off because he's like, I got him where he needs to be. But I wish people could have been a fly on the wall in my house when Kevin Burkhardt says Lucas Niang's in the game and I'm going crazy just because he's in the formation. Then they score the touchdown. Now, to be very accurate here, Lucas Niang was on the final two scoring plays for the Kansas City Chiefs because he's also on the field goal unit.
Gotcha.
But what I wanted to point out here is even with that emotional investment by me in this game, I will tell you that when I saw Patrick Mahomes go down on the ground and then get up limping at the end of the first half, in my heart, Trey, I believed the game was over.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie to you. That was – I mean, he was as hurt then in that. And by the way, Inside the NFL on Showtime has him mic'd up for that. And you can hear him talking about it.
Yeah.
And then, he must have an incredible pain tolerance. And obviously they took care of something at halftime in the extended dance mix version of halftime that is the Super Bowl. That was worrisome for me. That was worrisome for me.
Yeah.
I think at halftime, the only good thing you can say about this game, if you're a Chiefs fan, is that Patrick Mahomes is the only quarterback with a winning record when a team is down by 10 points. And, it was so huge. It was so huge of them to hold Philadelphia to a field goal instead of a touchdown on that last possession.
Yeah.
And we get in these big picture concepts, right, all the time. But more often than not, it's the smallest details that turn games. And to me, the ability for them to make sure they only got a field goal on that drive was significant. But you know what the biggest play in the game was? I mean, honestly, it was a false start by the Eagles.
Yeah.
First half, it's 14-7. Mm-hmm. It's 3rd and inches. They're lining up in the snowplow rugby scrum formation. They're going to get it.
Yeah.
And the right guard jumps. So it goes from 3rd and inches to 3rd and 6. And you can't run that play on 3rd and 6. And what happens on 3rd and 6? Hurts runs out to his right, drops the ball, and Nick Bolton scoops and scores. Yeah. Like if that play, if that false start doesn't happen, that scoop and score more than likely doesn't happen. Right. And now the Chiefs are down 21 at the half, 17 at the half, and it is a much different ball game. That was the most significant play in this Super Bowl was a false start by the Philadelphia Eagles. And that's it's the little things that mean more than the big things, especially in these kind of games.
Let me add one more little thing to that, because as you know, Thursday I got to spend time at the Chiefs Players Hotel while we were in Arizona. Mm-hmm. And I was talking with a couple of the players, and one of the things they mentioned was that they had seen on tape several times the Eagles get away on the rugby formation with the interior line beginning to rock forward.
Lean forward, right.
To get lower. And if you watch that false start, you'll see the guard does it. The refs don't pick up on it right away. But five Chiefs players who were looking for it get up and point it out to get that flag thrown. And again, it's those little things on tape that we see that lead to those things. But look, the last part of this, you know, recap of the Super Bowl is another penalty that I want to talk about, that everybody's talking about. And that was the holding call on James Bradberry at the end of the game that essentially – you know, sealed the game given the timeout situation for the Philadelphia Eagles. Trey, I don't think the question is, was it holding? I think we've seen enough evidence from not just James Bradberry himself, but the photographic evidence that
it was holding. So let's just get that out of the way.
Okay. Now, you and I haven't talked about this before the show, so I don't know exactly where you stand on this. Our good buddy Stink has a very clear take on this, one that I have a disagreement on. But the question is, should the refs have called it?
Yeah. I mean, I don't understand. Mark brought up a really good point with me on the show we did yesterday on Spotify Live, which was he brought up Greg Maddux as a pitcher and says, look, I start working the corners of the plate in the first inning. And I know if I hit the corner of the plate, that's a strike. So because Maddux is that good, he goes, so the next pitch, I'll take it an inch outside the corner of the plate. See if they'll still call that a strike.
Yeah.
If they call that a strike, then I'll take it another inch outside the strike zone to see if I can get away with that. After the first two innings, I know exactly where the strike zone is. I know exactly what my parameters are, what I have to work with. So Mark's thing was like, they didn't call that holding all game. And so his problem was, it felt like it was inconsistent. And to him, I said, I get that, but I think they're just bad and they missed one. Like they missed some. Like there was an obvious hold by Bradberry on third and eight in the first half.
Yep.
I mean, and he completely hooked him at Juju and turned him around. And that should have been a penalty and a first down, 5 yards and a first down, because Juju would have run for 30 yards on that play. There was no one else around him on that third and eight play. It was a perfect play design. Yep. And I understand that you want the consistency, but I hate people saying, oh, it was a ticky-tacky foul. Oh. Or I've heard people say it's a marginal foul. Well, you know what a marginal foul is? A foul, okay? There's nothing in the NFL rulebook that says, here are fouls, here are marginal fouls, and here are really, really amazing, like, over-the-top fouls.
You know the one that gets me?
Yeah.
Is the idea of, at that point in the game, you can't make that call.
Yeah.
Can someone tell me at where the cutoff is? Is it the 2-minute warning where it becomes a free for all and you can do whatever you want?
Well, the best way to describe that to me is that's what the NHL does. Okay. You know, they believe in something called situational ethics, which is things that happen at certain times in the game are not the same as things that happen in another time of the game. And you as the referee should be interpreting that. I think we can all agree the last thing we want these NFL referees to do is interpret more because they're not good enough to do that. And it's not a knock on them. They have a really hard job and they have an inordinate amount of things they have to calculate into every play. So to put in some sort of nuance and layered approach in there makes no sense. What I like about the NFL is that for the most part, something that's a foul in the first quarter is usually a penalty in the fourth quarter. And I'll give you an example. And I did this with Stink. I said, you remember Super Bowl 32, right? You guys won it. You beat the Packers 31-24.
He was there.
Yeah. I said, do you remember what happened on the final two drives of that game? And he said, no. I said, you guys were driving for the go-ahead score, tied at 24, and you were called for either a hold, not him, but the Broncos were called for either a hold or an illegal block which was a 15-yard penalty. And you know what? They had to find a way to fight through it, and they had found a way to score. And then after they did score, the Packers got the ball back. And before the interception that ended the game that Favre threw, there was a penalty for an illegal block or a hold, and they had to back up. The point I was trying to make is there were two calls that you would have said in this day and age, you can't make that call at this time. And they made it because that's what you're supposed to do as a referee. And oh, by the way, I don't hear anybody complaining about D Ford lining up offsides in the 2018
by a shoelace.
In the AFC Championship game, which negated a game-ending interception off of Tom Brady by Charvarius Ward with 1 minute and 20 seconds to play that would have sent the Chiefs to their first Super Bowl in this amazing run. And people would say, well, he lined up offsides. He had nothing to do with – no one said that. No one said that. Right. They just
Because at that point, Trey, the quarterback that it helped was Tom Brady, right?
Correct.
And there is this thing.
Unless you have your panties so bunched over D Ford, shut up about the hole. Just shut up, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, you can't. I hate selective outrage. It's my least favorite thing. I'm really mad in this situation about this. But sort of the same thing over there. I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, no, it doesn't work that way. If you're that pissy about the call, which was a correct call and was a foul, then you better be okay with all of them. Otherwise, shut up.
And you're sitting there going, it's not fair to the Eagles, you know, that late in the game at that point. Jalen Hurts
should have commit the penalty. Yeah, okay. That's my other thing. Let me get on my soapbox here for a second.
Go ahead.
People say, let the players decide. The player did decide by committing the foul. He chose to commit the foul. He chose to make the mistake. And if you see that and you don't call it, that to me is egregiously worse than just deciding, you know what? I'm not going
to
call
That's what I was just about
I'm
to say.
Gonna do that. I'm not going to do that. I don't want to interfere. No, that's your job. Your job is to see things and call them. And I would have way less respect for you if you saw it and you said, yeah, I think that was a foul, but I didn't want to call it at that time in the game.
Yeah.
Bullshit. That's bullshit.
Not no one seems to care. Like, apparently the Chiefs are the only team where, like, in the last 2 minutes, you should be allowed to commit penalties against them just so you have a chance. Like, that's how good the Chiefs apparently are, is that in those moments, you should be allowed to commit penalties against them just so you have an even playing field.
It's so dumb. I mean, the outrage over these two last games by the Chiefs over obvious fouls. No one's saying it wasn't a foul. They just didn't like the degree of the foul. Again, not in the rule book. There's no degrees in there. Was it a hold or was it not a hold?
Right.
Then you call it.
This isn't roughing or running into the punter. But no. I also do want to say, to be clear to everybody, it wasn't a marginal hold. It was a clear defensive holding.
Well, not only that, and then I get these people, well, he wouldn't have been able to catch it anyway. Yeah, that's because he was held. That's why that rule is in place. That's why if it's 3rd and 37 and you hold somebody, you get a first down because you have no idea what he would have been able to do had you not hold him. And also, fun fact for all these people that were coming at me on Twitter, well, it was an uncatchable ball. That doesn't apply to holding. That applies to pass interference. It doesn't apply to defensive holding. So if you want to have this conversation, maybe know what the hell you're talking about.
Yeah. Things like this expose all the wrong people. But all right, that is our Super Bowl 57 recap. And by the way, I want to give a quick shout out to our friends over at Pickett, who helped us put together that first segment. Trey, as we talked about Super Bowl 57, as you know, I put a lot of money down on my behavior bets model over at Caesars Sportsbook. That's where I got it going on. If you wanted to, I think I placed over 25 bets across the spectrum here, and I was able to track my success on every single one of them because of Pickett, the best bet tracking app on the market. Don't take my word for it. Google it yourself. It is a free app to download, a free app to use. And if you use promo code PFNBRETT, PFNBRETT, you will have the opportunity to also win a $100 cash bonus just for downloading the free app. It's free. It's the best. And you might win some money. I'm not sure why you haven't downloaded it yet. Please go do it. That is Pickett. Okay. Over to our second segment, the question as we come out of every Super Bowl, Trey, as we get into now what becomes the offseason, is where do we go from here for each of these teams? And the first thing I want to do is talk about the Chiefs. They have a few really interesting decisions to make coming up this offseason. For one, both of their tackles become free agents. Andrew Wiley, who played a remarkable game at right tackle for the Kansas City Chiefs,
is a free agent. Zero sacks given up. I mean, honestly, if you're not going to give it to Jalen Hurts, give the MVP award to the unit of the offensive line of the Kansas City Chiefs. Zero sacks given up.
Absolutely. So you have that Orlando Brown, who played on the franchise tag this year.
He's getting a long term deal.
That's something that's coming up. Frank Clark is up for something. Chris Jones is coming into a contract year. What do they want to do there? Clearly, the Chiefs have a lot of things, and it's very, very key players. Juju Smith-Schuster coming up for free agency. What are your thoughts on all these things the Chiefs have to do?
Well, let's start with the last one you mentioned, Juju. He had a great second half in the Super Bowl, but I'm not paying a ton for Juju. If he wants to stay around and win Super Bowls and get a $1 million bonus like he did for all the things he achieved in the second half, he got a $1 million bonus. That's great. We found that Kansas City can win with a lot of different people at wide receiver because they have 15. So I think Juju, if he wants to come back, is they only have three wide receivers under contract, by the way. Sky Moore, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, and Kadarius Toney. Kadarius Toney still has 3 years on a rookie deal, by the way. 3 years left on a rookie contract if they want to pick up the fifth-year option for him as a first-round player. Chef's kiss good by Brett Veach. So they're going to need to sign some wide receivers. If they can get Juju back on a friendly deal, I think they have Juju back. I think Mecole Hardman probably leaves in free agency. Jerick McKinnon is always a free agent, DJ Dirty J. It seems like they always sign him to a one-year deal, and he's just unbelievable. I have to believe they'll find a way to do what they always do with Jerick McKinnon, is bring him back sometime in the summer.
They love him in the locker room, Trey. A locker room presence, they love
not, him. Yeah, and he's a great blitz pickup guy for Patrick. Jerick McKinnon's best strength to me is that Patrick trusts him to pick up the blitz.
Yeah.
Forget all the other stuff and the catches and all that, which are great. But the most important thing he does is Patrick protects him. He protects Patrick, and Patrick believes he can get that job done. So Juju, one way or the other. Wiley is interesting. There are some people on that team and that offense, one of your clients, I think, that could push some of those guys for some of those spots. But Orlando Brown's getting a long-term deal. They got to get that done from Kansas City. I think Orlando Brown stays in Kansas City.
Okay.
They didn't want to do it this year, but because of the brilliance of the Chiefs draft in 2022, and I was just looking at the picture here, here's their draft class. Trent McDuffie.
Stud.
George Karloftis.
Stud.
Sky Moore. Brian Cook. Leo Chenal, Joshua Williams, Jalen Watson, and Isaiah Pacheco. Okay.
All key players in this game.
I mean, Darian Kennard was in there as well, and Nazee Johnson was drafted. But those guys, they all were key players on the Chiefs. And Sky Moore had a rough start to the year, but he had the punt return that sent them to the Super Bowl in the AFC Championship game, and he had the touchdown catch, albeit on the wrong side of the formation, that gave them their biggest lead in the Super Bowl. McDuffie, Cook, Watson, and Williams have that secondary set up for years because of the rookie contracts. Isaiah Pacheco in a seventh rounder. Are you kidding me? And Leo Chenal played meaningful minutes.
He played more in the Super Bowl than he played in the 5 or 6 weeks leading up to it.
He did, because the plan was to sell out to stop the run. That's what they were going to do. If Jalen Hurts was going to beat him, they were not going to get pounded into the ground by Miles Sanders and Boston Scott and Gainwell. And they didn't. The Chiefs actually outgained the Philadelphia Eagles with that vaunted offensive line. It's a really good offensive line on the ground. The Chiefs sold out to stop the run. And Chenal, that's the reason Chenal played a bunch of minutes there.
Yeah.
But the Chiefs also have either 10 or 11 picks in the upcoming draft. The Chiefs have done the hardest thing
and
already.
And cap space.
Yeah. They've done the hardest thing already. They've won after paying their quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Why do you think the Chargers loaded up with JC Jackson and Khalil Mack and everyone else they signed over there? Because they had Herbert on a rookie deal.
Yeah.
Why do you think you know, the Bengals went up and revamped their complete deep offensive line this past season because they have Joe Burrow on a rookie deal. And oh, by the way, they're already talking about the potential of having to leave or lose T. Higgins to get the deal done for Joe Burrow. It would be like so uproariously glorious if they have to lose him and the Chiefs, who need a wide receiver, decide to pick up T. Higgins, right?
I'm not saying I'm rooting for it, but I'm not saying I'm not rooting for it.
I just like the Chiefs, outside of those players you mentioned, the Chiefs' biggest needs this offseason, they're going to have to find another pass rusher because I don't know what Dunlap's status is, and I don't know if they're going to bring him back for another year. But you're going to need to get Chris Jones more help. Like, Chris Jones cannot be the only guy. Now, Karlaftis came on great down the stretch, but to me, if you're asking me the glaring needs for Kansas City personnel-wise going forward, they need another receiver or two, and they're going to need to find an edge presence that can give them pass rush besides Chris Jones and Karlaftis.
Yeah. You know, I think that the Chiefs are in such a good spot on the offensive line. Don't be surprised if they bring Andrew Wiley back on a multi-year deal. He played his – look, you would think that I'd be here, you know, whining for my guy Lucas Niang here. But the reality is that Andrew did nothing to lose his spot this year. He did everything to keep it and gain it. Don't be surprised if they bring him back. Jeff Schwartz pointed this out following the game. Like, the Chiefs are so confident in their offensive line depth. Typically on that tackle going from eligible to ineligible, they do that on third down, a play where the tackle's eligible, because then they go and kick a field goal. They don't want to run their backup tackle out there. But the Chiefs have such confidence in their guys that they ran it on second down and brought in their backup right tackle, Lucas Niang, on third down because they know that all of them can get the job done. So I got to imagine all three of those guys, Lucas, Andrew, and Orlando Brown Jr., all come back. Lucas is the swing tackle, by the way. He comes in for either Orlando or Andrew there. But to your point, I'm with you. I think wide receiver and a pass rusher are the two biggest needs for this team. I would love to see them get some young guys in, continue this youth movement as
Patrick. Again, they have 10 or 11 picks depending on the compensatory value.
And that's what
they will be bringing. This is why they win for at least another 3 or 4 years, in my opinion. I'm not saying they're going to win the Super Bowl every year, but they're going into the season every year as a favorite contender. Because of the 2022 draft class. And all those guys are going to be cheap for a while. And whether they want to like it or not is kind of irrelevant. That's the system that the NFL has set up. And then they have 10 or 11 picks this year. So they can be very judicious with how they spend their money. And I think they're going to go after they need to replenish wide receivers. But what wide receiver isn't going to want to play for number 15, right? Juju was great. I mean, don't get me wrong, he was great, but nobody was clamoring for Juju Smith-Schuster. That's why he had a one-year contract. Yeah. Like the back and forth between AJ Brown and Juju over his balance, which I thought was kind of lame. If you haven't seen it, Juju put a picture of James Bradbury up there and said, "Hold me," or something like that for Valentine's Day. And it was just this punching down. And the guy admitted it, you know.
Right.
And AJ Brown said, "Hey, congratulations on your championship, but you were more of a TikTok star than a football star before."
TikTok boy, he called him.
TikTok boy before Patrick Mahomes reignited your career. And that's a factual statement. Okay?
It is.
I mean, it's a factual statement. I mean, like, Eric Decker got millions of dollars from the Jets because Peyton Manning decided to throw him the ball.
Julius Thomas got millions of dollars from the Dolphins because Peyton
made by Manning. Julius Thomas and Eric Decker should look at their bank account and go, "Thanks, Peyton."
Yep. And Adam Gates should look at his bank account and do the same thing.
Juju Smith-Schuster should look at that. "Thanks, Patrick. Appreciate you."
Yeah.
Whatever happens with Juju, I don't know. But this is what I know. The Chiefs will find receivers and Patrick Mahomes will throw to them, probably for the most yards and the most touchdowns in the NFL next year.
That's the way it's looking. Well, let's take a look at the other team, the Philadelphia Eagles.
This is interesting.
Philadelphia Eagles
are interesting.
The next segment, we will talk about the coaches because already that movement has occurred. But coming up on the free agent side of things, the Eagles are potentially going to lose a lot of players. Fletcher Cox, Brandon Graham. I mean, we're talking about big, important names for this team. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, some of those guys, they're going to lose in free agency. Some they're going to need to move on from because, you know, they're getting to the end of their productive lives here in terms of football. You know, they brought in Ndamukong Suh halfway through the season. He's probably not coming back. And they're going to have to start thinking about paying Jalen Hurts. And what does that mean? Right? And
I'm hearing, what are we here? $50 million a year?
Yeah. It's just a question of when they want to get it done and how they want to negotiate that cap when it happens. So I think it's much more likely that the Eagles will lose more significant players than the Chiefs will lose significant players. And then the question becomes, okay, what's the long-term ramification for Jalen Hurts and the Eagles in terms of dominance in the NFC? The Vikings and Kirk Cousins do not scare me. You know, I'm sorry, that's not a thing for me. The 49ers are interesting they have a quarterback, right? If they have, by the way, Aaron Rodgers, like, with all due respect, bro, like, I know you get your, you know, nose out of joint when things don't happen the way you want them to happen. Why would you not want to go to San Francisco? Like, you're not going anywhere just to play, right? You have an unbelievable offensive line. You have Christian McCaffrey. You have a defense that can win you championship games. You have ample wide receivers in Ayuk and Debo and a couple of the other guys they have there. It won't be San Francisco. George Kittle has a title. Why would you – if I'm Aaron Rodgers, I'm clamoring to go to San Francisco. Like, but don't let your feelings get in the way here, bro. Like, your feelings? Really? Man, your feelings. Your feelings are gonna do this.
Every appearance I've seen him make beyond the golf tournament, it's all it was a grievance session for him to get his grievances out there. He is very much in his feels. And look, what Aaron, best to you. Like I said, I'm ready for you to join Tom and have a great time because we got a lot of young bucks coming up that are making it a lot of fun to watch. I'm not entirely interested in your sensory deprivation room retreat thing.
Here's the deal. Come back and play, great. You're one of the best, but you got to play better than you did for most of this season. Like, you were better down the stretch, but, you know, it wasn't a good year for you. And by the way, I'm really curious to see what happens if Aaron Rodgers does indeed leave, and I think he's absolutely leaving this offseason. So because Aaron Rodgers had back-to-back MVPs, he bullied the Packers into a new contract, right? He had all the leverage. And I'm for players having leverage. When you have the hammer, you know what you do? Swing it. So I'm happy for him to do that. But that cost you Devontae Adams, right? That's why your contract is why Devontae Adams was traded, right? You can pretend like it wasn't, but that's what happened. So now in back-to-back years, the Packers see their best wide receiver in a long time walk out the door because Aaron Rodgers got his money. And Aaron Rodgers is walking out the door this offseason. That's a double Eli Manning Philadelphia special from Aaron Rodgers to the Green Bay organization and their fan base. And I'm really curious to see how they handle that.
Yeah, stay tuned. I'm sure we'll have tons of that coming up.
We'll be upset about it all, especially if he goes to the Jets. If he goes to the Jets, by the way, really? Like, you couldn't stand Brett Favre for the way he treated you. And you're going to do the exact same thing. You're literally going to do the exact same thing and go to the Jets. Whatever, man. All good.
Hey, if he goes to the Jets, you know our guy Tony Pauline will have all the info on it. So
that is correct.
See where that goes. All right, let's you know, we can't talk about the offseason for each of these teams and not talk about what typically happens to the teams that play in the Super Bowl and they get their coaching staffs rated. Both Shane Steichen and John Gannon, both the offensive and defensive coordinators for the Philadelphia Eagles.
John hired. He goes by John. What?
Does he? Okay. What did I say? Jack? John. Sorry.
John.
Sorry, John. Didn't mean to be informal Jonathan. With you. Mr. Gannon. They are
big G.
Both hired to be head coaches. Shane with the Indianapolis Colts and Mr. Gannon with the Arizona Cardinals. Before we get to Eric Bieniemy in that situation, how are we feeling about both of those hires and what it maybe means for the Eagles and what they have to do?
Well, I certainly feel that both of them are walking into very interesting situations.
Sure.
Let's start with Steichen, right? Who's your quarterback?
Yeah.
That's all I need to know. Who are you getting? You getting Aaron Rodgers? You getting Derek Carr? It'd be the sixth quarterback in six different years for the Indianapolis Colts to start the season. It was Matt Ryan. It was Carson Wentz, Phillip Rivers, Andrew Luck. And before that, it was
Jacoby Brissett.
Yeah. So it'll be the sixth different starting quarterback to start the year. So, you know, who you getting? Because a lot of other things in Indy are good, you know. A lot of other things in Indy are very, very good. Who's playing quarterback? Because it ain't Sam Ellinger. I'll tell you that. It ain't that dude. And then there's Gannon going to Arizona. That's a mess.
Let me ask you about the Colts for a second, because there was talk about – there is going to be talk all the way up until the draft of what the Chicago Bears do with Justin Fields. Personally, I don't think they trade him, but if he is available, given what we just saw Steichen do with Jalen Hurts in Philadelphia, don't you think the Colts have to be at the front of the line to try to grab Justin Fields if he's available?
Or grab the pick, because one of the other – Bryce Young is there, you know.
Right.
I mean – you know, I think that, yeah, I can't believe that the Bears. Well, hold on, let me be clear.
Yeah, come on.
I can believe it, but there's no way they should do it. I mean,
there you go.
You have a dude for the first time since Sid Luckman. Okay? Like, you had a couple of years with Bobby Douglas and Jim McMahon. No, had a good run in the 80s. You know, you have a dude. Build around. Look what the Eagles did. See Philadelphia. Okay.
Wait.
Give him things and amazing things will follow.
If you're gonna punt
on Justin Fields after this season, then you deserve to go and play Wrexham. Okay.
Yes. Ooh, Wrexham.
Get out. Just get out.
Yeah.
So to me, I love the idea of them being aggressive with the pick. But look, if the Bears are stupid enough to get rid of Justin Fields, take him.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. All right. So talk to me about the Arizona Cardinals. Steve Keim out as a GM. They went with the Eagles defensive coordinator. Now, everything I hear, Trey, is that he's a great leader and a great culture guy. But I already said at the top of the show how I feel about how that defense actually was. Do you think they're coming in with the expectation that he's going to – you know, be this defensive guru?
My question, like the first thing I would ask, so, hey, congratulations. We're glad you're here. How the hell were those two wide receivers so wide open in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl? Like, can you explain that to me? Like, there wasn't a single person on the planet close to Kadarius Toney. And then Sky Moore was even more wide open. So, like, that's the first thing I would, hey, great you're here. What the hell was that? I don't think I've ever seen two more wide open touchdowns in a Super Bowl in my life. In my life.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen that.
On the same
play.
That's
the first thing I'm asking. That's the first thing I'm asking.
Yeah.
But it's a mess, right? Okay? Because Steve Keim and Kyler and Cliff all got contract extensions this past offseason. Because they're all in this together. Well, Keim is gone. Cliff is gone. And the only reason Kyler is there because Cliff got the job and no one else was going to take him first overall in the 2019 draft. So now you have a giant stinking mess. And that quarterback is coming off an ACL, and that may be the least of his problems. Okay?
Yeah.
That guy needs to learn how to play quarterback. Like the study clause, people don't just make that shit up. Hey, I got this crazy idea. We should put a clause in this contract. It's wild. What do you think? They did it for a reason. I can tell you, when I asked someone in the organization about that clause, which they eventually took out because, of course, it was a PR disaster, the guy said, trust but verify to me in a text. Well, if you have to verify, then you have no trust. And it's a disaster. Like, JJ's gone. I don't know what's going to happen with DeAndre. Like, the Arizona Cardinals, they may be taking it down to the studs, man. Like, They got some good players in the secondary, Buda Baker and a couple other guys, and Simmons is good. But where are we going? Like, where is this franchise headed?
What's the vision?
In that division, in the NFC West, I have to believe the Rams are going to be better. Seattle made the postseason. And, oh, by the way, the San Francisco 49ers exist. So,
yeah.
You know, I'm happy that Jonathan Gannon got a job, and it's wonderful. But that's a tall order for that dude.
I think I saw somewhere once upon a time that Josh Rosen was definitely their guy. Maybe they can turn to him and he can help them out. All right, let's talk real quick about Eric Bieniemy. This feels like an annual conversation, an annual discussion. I don't know that it's as cut and dry as it's being made out nationally. I happen to know that there are real concerns with Eric Bieniemy as some stuff going on with his past, his history, both as a college player and a college coach that is hurting him. But at some point, if he's going to continue to be, I mean, just a obviously successful offensive coordinator, aren't you surprised no one's taken even a shot yet?
Yeah. I mean, look, Ryan Clark said something really smart today. Or was it yesterday? You're going to have to explain to me what the criteria is that he's not hitting. And if people don't want to talk about something that happened in his past, well, then we need to know about that.
Yeah.
Because Shane, like you mentioned, Steichen and Gannon both got jobs not winning the Super Bowl. Okay. He's just been the offensive coordinator in a team that's been to three in the last 4 years and won two of them. And I know there's this, well, it's really Andy or it's really Eric. There are layers to this that are fascinating to me because Eric almost didn't come back this year. He was on an expiring contract last year and they brought him back under Andy for another year this year. And he's on an expiring contract now. So, there are layers to this that need to be understood because I can't look at his resume and then look at someone like Steichen or Gannon or some of these other guys that got head coaching jobs and say their resume is any different. Yeah. You know, like
what have they done?
No, you can't say it's better. So what is it? I mean, what is the problem? So because we need to be transparent about this. Why isn't Eric Bieniemy leading this offense again as the offense, whether you think he calls the plays or not, he is entitled the offensive coordinator. And then we lose Tyreek Hill and we have the number one offense, the number one scoring offense. And of course, Patrick Mahomes, as we mentioned, did all those things. Then what is it? Somebody, you know, help a brother out, as they like to say, tell me what it is so we can all understand. Cause right now, objectively, from looking at it from a distance, none of it makes sense.
Yeah. And it's a really glaring situation that every single year for the last 4 years, this has been the one coach that we talk about. And this isn't a guy, by the way, who like this year interviewed with every team and didn't get a job. He only interviewed with the Colts, Trey. The other four teams didn't even ask him to come in for an interview. So either it's getting to a point where they have fatigue of just interviewing him and he's just never going to get a job, or there's something else going on here. And like you said, at some point, someone's got to tell us what's going on because every year we can't be just having this conversation.
Be straight with us so we know, you know. You hear all these things and I don't know what's true and what isn't true, but at some point it needs to be put together in a way that makes sense because from a distance, you know, from 10,000 feet, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, look, that is going to be our full recap of Super Bowl 57 and the two teams that participated. Next week, we get to bring in our good friend Tony Pauline, who gets to join us as we start to transition towards the NFL's offseason and most notably the NFL draft, which ironically will take place in Kansas City this year. Go ahead, Trey.
There is no offseason.
That's correct.
There is no off, except for 2 weeks in June.
That's right.
There's preseason, regular season, postseason, and now arguably the most interesting season we have all year, the player procurement season,
which begins with
free agency and the draft. And just think how crazy it was last year. Wait, Devontae Adams is what? Tyreek Hill is where? AJ Brown is who? Deshaun Watson got what? You know, we got Lamar Jackson. That's a big matzo ball hanging out there. You know, what's going to happen with Aaron Rodgers for the 17th straight playoff procurement season? I mean, it's going to be it'll take something to be as crazy as it was last year, but it's going to be up there.
We've got the pieces. We've got the pieces to make that happen. We and you couldn't be in a better spot than with us every single Wednesday to talk about it. We got our guy Tony, who's as plugged into the league as anybody, who will be bringing us all the inside information that he is hearing. I'm excited to go through it with you guys. We'll be going all the way through the NFL draft, including doing some video work, I believe, could change during the NFL draft. So we will see you guys then. We will see you next week, joined by our guy Tony Pauline. Until then, have fun, because it's about to get crazier.
Sports.